You're listening to the Career Crossroads broadcast of today's shared headlines. CXR members get full articles and additional members-only content at careercrossroads.com. The Consumer Candidate, a recruiting chat with Chris Waite and Jess Von Bank. You know, we frequently get asked to be guest speakers on radio shows, podcasts, and webinars, but find it such a challenge to get time carved out of our schedules to join industry friends or colleagues that it just doesn't happen as often as we like. And if you can't tell already, we're really working on that. So that's why I'm excited when I get a chance to share any open or unscripted dialogue that occurs when we're able to make that time happen, especially with people like Jess Von Bank, and when it's a topic we're passionate about, like candidate experience and the consumer candidate. So recently I joined Jess for a 30-minute call where we openly discuss topics that range from candidate experience to embracing bots and innovation in recruiting to some of the little things that can make all the difference in our branding and marketing towards talent. So I'd encourage our readers and, of course, now our listeners to head over to the Road to HR Tech blog to get Jess's in-depth write-up on the chat, as well as check out some of the other great conversations being shared. The series is sponsored by Symphony Talent, but presently you won't find any product or sponsorship plugs, just good conversations with the likes of Chloe Ratta from Sodexo, Craig Fisher over at CA Technologies, and of course Will Staney at Proactive Talent Strategies. So give it a listen, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks, everyone, for joining the Road to HR Tech. Yet again, we just chatted last Thursday. Here we are today. This is Jess Von Bank. By now, hopefully you know me and what I'm all about. We're doing the Road to HR Tech as a lead-up, a webcast series leading up to HR Tech, the conference held this year in Las Vegas. But even if you're not planning to attend, we're trying to create conversation around topics that we all care about: recruitment marketing, candidate management, and then the employee experience. And today's guest is Chris Hoyt. I'll introduce him further in just a second here. But we really appreciate everybody joining live. The topic today, if you've been following our content and some of the blogs we've been putting out there, is around candidate experience. And I'm covering candidate experience in the recruitment marketing sort of sense of the word, because we're talking about how to attract talent and what candidates or job seekers sort of expect when they engage with you, when they experience your brand, and how to find and attract them. But that bleeds into, of course, the candidate management piece, what they expect as an applicant. So we'll kind of get to that as well. But before we do, I want to introduce my guest, Chris Hoyt. I'm so happy to have him because we kind of go way back. He used to be a customer at PepsiCo. So he's got the big brand experience, but he's also got the really, really relevant experience that he's garnered through all of his customer interactions with Career Crossroads. So I'm going to let Chris do his own intro and tell us what he's up to now and a little bit about Career Crossroads.
Great. Thanks, Jess. I've been in recruiting over 20 years, about 2 years ago. I joined Career Crossroads, and my business partner, Jerry Crispin, and I run Career Crossroads together. If you're not familiar with Career Crossroads, we're a 20-year-old professional community that consists of literally vetted recruiting professionals that are committed to sharing competitive practices. We bring staffing leaders and practitioners from around the world, from what is now, I'd say, about 110 different organizations that hire anywhere from 2,000 to 200,000 people a year. We bring them together live and online to discuss their biggest challenges, what's trending or going on in talent acquisition space, and what's working or not working for them. And Jerry and I just facilitate the discussions and manage the community of recruiting professionals that ultimately care about our industry, candidates, and quite frankly, each other as TA professionals.
And Jerry also is affiliated with the Talent Board, which of course puts on the candies. And so, you know, between your background as a practitioner in this space, longtime experienced professional in this space, and then the exposure to all of those experiences and conversations you have with all of those big brands, that's why I thought this topic was really, really perfect for you in particular. Around candidate experience. So let me just start by playing a little bit of devil's advocate here, because I'm a former recruiter too. And when I hear candidate experience, any recruiter, any sort of, you know, curmudgeon-y recruiter who's been working a desk for a while might, you know, think of candidate experience and it sounds maybe a little bit fluffy because, you know, we've got 40 recs on our desk and we just want qualified applicants to line up to our open positions only if they're perfectly relevant. Please don't apply if you're not qualified. And I'm just going to put you through the process, and you're going to pre-screen and assess yourself, and you're going to nail your interview, and you're going to return all my phone calls in a timely fashion. That's not how this works. We actually have to deliver an experience now.
No, that's exactly how it works. That's how it works for everybody. That's why we can all be recruiters. It's so easy.
Yeah.
I think, you know, post and pray is not really a viable recruiting option when you're looking for the best talent. I mean, if you want to present, and I think I've said this before, if you want to present the five last qualified candidates to a hiring manager as a recruiter, that's okay. You know, and if your brand is big enough to pull that, but not if you want to present or connect with the five most qualified candidates. And we all know the reasons why we look for the best talent, but oftentimes I think as recruiters and you know, now this evolution of brand, employer brand and marketing, we struggle with how to connect with them or how to get them to connect with us. And sometimes absolutely on any level.
And so to that point, we're hearing, I swear, every conference, and you do more than I do, the rage is around the consumer candidate. And I think of that in a couple of different ways. I think about the fact that as job seekers, we expect a certain type of experience in terms of how we engage with a brand, visit a career site, what we expect to see there. And if we apply, if, you know, what that looks like, can I do it on my mobile? How long is it? How, you know, what does the feedback loop look like? As a consumer, how we purchase goods and services online looks one way, and sort of mirroring that for job seekers looks another way. So there's that thought. The other thought around a consumer candidate is the fact that, especially if you're a CPG type brand, all of your job seekers are potential customers. And so the way you treat them as a job seeker has direct impact to your bottom line, because it may affect a buying decision on the financial side. So talk to me a little bit about the consumer candidate from either perspective or both.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's not always easy to make the connection that every candidate is a customer. While that's true, I do think it's a vital approach that we should be taking, or when we think about how we actually treat candidates. So Starbucks, for instance, knows that if they treat a candidate poorly, it can definitely impact customer loyalty. It's super easy to connect the dots sort of in that retail consumer industry. The Candidate Experience Awards, which we sort of mentioned earlier, run by the talent board and of course a series of volunteers and nonprofit, does a really great job of making this in some cases painfully visible to employers by asking hundreds of thousands of participants, candidates, how their experience actually impacts brand loyalty. And what's really interesting to me is, and we talk about this transparency, we talk about trying to get sort of past that, what companies like WorkPop are doing, a small organization that's out in California. Candidates that actually apply through the platform are not only seeing companies that might be recommended to them for a job or interest or skills matches, but also have the ability to rank companies based on how responsive they are, right? The positivity or that element of that experience. So setting really clear expectations right up front before somebody even bothers to apply. I mean, if you're a candidate that's looking to apply between two competitors because both of them have a similar job that would be interesting to you, which one as a candidate are you most likely to try to connect with? The one that says that, you know, before you apply, you know they're going to respond because 90% of the time they're hitting candidates back in the first 48 hours, or the one that has an abysmal response score that comes back because we've got no loyalty there from a candidate perspective. And I mean, look, if I went to an online retailer, for example, right, and I had a hard time finding a product or sorting options or finding the prices or checking out or with delivery, I'm going to find another retailer, right? That's just how it's going to work. And I heard a really great example using Amazon yesterday. A reseller was out of a product, right, or had a bad rating for something this guy was looking for, and he saw the other people bought this option. You've probably seen as you scroll down, there's a nice list of other products that are similar. Not the exact same product, right, Jess, but higher consumer ratings. And he straight up opted for the other versus the original product. And we're behind the curve in talent if we're not paying attention to the experience that we absolutely deliver from start to finish. And of course, where it finishes from a recruiting standpoint is a whole nother topic.
Totally. So I have a story along those lines as well. And so this sort of speaks to how we you know, where we find potential job seekers, potential, because active, passive, everybody is a potential applicant if you catch their attention in the right way at the right time, right? And so that's our favorite. That's the beloved passive candidate. So I think of the story of my first experience with Rent the Runway. I had a black tie gala this winter, and it had to be a red theme, formal. Of course, I don't have anything like that just sort of hanging in my closet. So I'd been hearing about Rent the Runway, and I decided to try it the first time. They have the site, they have an app, and so I did some searches. And every time I went back to the site, whether I was on the app or on my laptop, based on what I had been hearting, liking, and searching and clicking on, it was showing me more relevant, more personalized recommendations. Soon it was only showing me red gowns, or it was only showing me things similar to what I had been looking at. I loved everything about the app, all tons of ratings and customer reviews and stylist input. And when I finally ordered something, the customer service was amazing. Everything about my experience with that site and with that brand was perfect. And it was the first time I'd ever tried them. I wrote a review after, and I never write reviews. We all love to read reviews, but how often do we actually write our own review? And I have told no less than 10 people to try that brand now because of my experience, and I can't wait to use them again. So I'm a return customer waiting to happen. I've told 10 people to use them. I gave them a positive review. So when you think about a talent brand, think about the thousands, millions in some cases for big companies, of job seekers who apply, many of whom never get an interview, and even fewer of whom ever get hired. How do they create that kind of brand, that kind of experience, and that kind of brand loyalty for the thousands who will never even talk to them or get a job, but who will continue to experience their brand either on the consumer or the talent side?
Well, I mean, I think it's sort of, you know, we talk among our colleagues, we talk among our peers, we talk among our friends, our family, even what's defined, could be defined as our inner circle. And we share positive experiences. And I think the ratio, it's completely anecdotal, and it may have come from some funny little poster somewhere. But I mean, we'll share, if you're sharing 10 things that went really well, you're probably sharing 100 that went really poorly. Right. And so I think it's just a piece of who we are as, you know, part of humanity. We like to talk and connect and share. And I think that's just a piece of what happens. And we are not shy about sharing with our inner circle about what happened or why, ABC company treated us poorly or why we'll never go back there.
So in your experience with your colloquium members, what are you finding brands are trying to measure, or at what transaction points, we'll call them, or touch points, are they trying to get feedback to understand where they're failing or where they're succeeding?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of measurement pieces that take place from a usability standpoint out on the career sites. So we have an awful lot of members that are talking about the ease of use and how easy it was to find the jobs that they were looking for, how easy it was to actually get through the process. They're also measuring things like being able to get feedback from candidates, asking them if they were able to share everything that they wanted to share about their own skills, right, or their own background, and being able to get that, or if they felt that they had been treated fairly throughout the process. And these are all touch points that get gathered in any number of places throughout the process. And even those, there are a handful of organizations that are pulling in feedback from candidates that were rejected. And in some cases, we have one company that has put together a wine and cheese sort of event for candidates that did not make the final cut. And they invite them back to not only network, but talk a little bit with the teams about, you know, how their experience was and how they felt through that process. So I think that's something that 5 years ago would have been unheard of. There's no way I'm calling people back for a wine. It would change the term wine from a drink to maybe a complimentary drink. Right? We'd be so scared of that feedback. But today we're actually looking for that feedback. And I think some of the sharpest criticism that comes back are some of our biggest developmental opportunities. I mean, just you've got a great background in the vendor space. And I'm sure that you have had one or two conversations with, you know, dissatisfied customers who want a refund. Right. And while those things may hurt.
None of them were my customers.
No, of course not. Of course not. But while those things may hurt the organization, they're painful to go through, it's a really telling bit of feedback that they feel so strongly about it, that it's something that needs repairing, right? And it's something that needs addressing. And I think that's a big piece that talent acquisition has really begun to take seriously, is we're looking for feedback at this point, warts and all. And I think that's a pretty exciting phase for where we're at from a developmental or an evolution standpoint from a candidate experience perspective.
I'll steal one of your own analogies. We hear about the funnel a lot, and similar to a sales and marketing funnel, the marketing funnel, same thing applies to talent attraction, how you find them, where you engage, nurture, convert, all the way down to a hire. I like your analogy though about the sieve. And so when you talk about why it matters, why that feedback matters, for a couple of reasons, if you can't continue to improve upon what you're doing well, you're potentially not competing for the very best talent. You're not putting your very best foot forward. But what about the flip side? In your example, what if good people are actually falling through the cracks because you delivered a terrible experience? So I think it works both ways.
Yeah, I think I'd like to see funnels evolve into a little, you know, you kind of go from this to a little more of a chute than a funnel. And I think a big piece of that from a branding and a marketing, you know, and a big onus of that shift comes with the branding and the marketing teams that are within talent acquisition and getting, you know, attraction and connection to take place with the right talent up front. No recruiter wants, you know, 100 people to apply to a rec that are just going to be somebody they've got to sift through. It's an absolute time suck. It's a challenge to get through that. What they're wanting are people that are a better fit, that are the, you know, from a culture standpoint for the organization or from a skills standpoint for, you know, for the particular job, to be able to work through that, because that makes that time spent on that rec much more productive and meaningful. And I think that's a big shift. And, you know, you and I were talking about this a little bit earlier. I still feel like there is a bit of a identity crisis that we've got from a recruiting and a branding and a marketing standpoint. And that's one that's sort of a tough piece. I don't know if you want to get into that on this call, but that's one that's sort of tough.
Let's go there.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've got for nearly a decade now, right? I've been having conversations with peers when I led branding and marketing efforts in recruiting, and colleagues even today, and with leaders of large organizations. And one of their biggest challenges today is helping candidates to better identify with them as an employer, right? Helping candidates to understand that a big four accounting firm doesn't just hire accountants or actuaries, or that a global CPG organization doesn't just hire branding people to work on the specific brands, right? So we have to look at those challenges, I think, a little differently, because we're still tackling the same thing in slightly different ways. And as an industry, I feel like sometimes it's becoming way too common for us to retool what we do versus really rethink what we do. And out of the gate, when big budgets, for instance, aren't a reality, companies will be better served to put in place not just branding experts, right? People to run these segments, this 5-6-year-old job that didn't exist anymore, but team builders, bridge builders, directors that get people to follow them, to go with them, true influencers, internal influencers. Because not everyone has made that relationship with the consumer marketing or the communications team's success. And they continue to still fight that same battle of, all I gotta do is figure out how to tell candidates who we really are and they'll just love us. But right now they don't really know who we are, and so we're struggling. It's that same battle. And I'd like to see more succeed in that area, because I believe that's a large part of the secret to unlocking the challenge that they just continue to face.
So I'm at our sales, internal sales training meeting in Phoenix right now. And in the room yesterday, we were going through some case studies, and one of my colleagues brought up the example of Allstate. We all know Allstate, and there's a certain picture and image that comes to mind when we think of Allstate. They were attending their first Grace Hopper event. They want women in tech. So how does Allstate stack up against Google at Grace Hopper? And so they struggled with, and we helped them with that, but they struggled with sort of that brand crisis or identity crisis, because that image that you and I just had when I said Allstate, how does that play out at Grace Hopper? Well, guess who they went to? They had to go to their consumer, to their marketing team, and say, what are we doing on your side to attract a certain type of profile or persona to our brand, and how can we leverage that in talent attraction? Because we have a message that nobody's heard or that we need to do a better job telling, and that translates to the type of people we need to attract to our organization to help us do that.
Yeah, it's ongoing. I mean, who does it well? Nike. Nike builds and maintains a great relationship with their consumer side to leverage resources. PepsiCo, even from my own experience, has long been strengthening the relationship with communications and marketing. There are lots of great organizations that are getting there, but the majority of us in leadership roles, the C-suite even, unfortunately missed the opportunity to make a more cohesive and transparent brand really, really possible.
Mm-hmm. So I want to loop back because loop back to something you said earlier, because it's to me, it's one of the more exciting things happening in our space right now. You talked about the funnel becoming more of a chute. That's because we don't need all of this noise, the people we didn't intend to target or attract, because that's what leads to poor candidate experience. That's all of the people we can't possibly touch that never hear from us or go through a certain experience. Why bother with them? Plus, it's wasted advertising dollars if we actually spent money to get the wrong type of applicant. So one of the more exciting things happening in our space, I think, is the idea of really personalized, hyper-targeted type of advertising where we know the persona that we want to attract for a certain type of job profile, and the way technology allows this, and digital and social and all of the data points we can use to hone in on that persona and then to give really good branded targeted messaging to that audience in the hopes of attracting them to the right jobs. So all of the tech and the tools and the big brother and the data science and AI, we all love AI, all of that stuff makes that possible. And to me, that translates to a better candidate experience, because if I'm talking to the right people in the first place, I've eliminated some of that black hole problem.
Yeah, I agree. We're at a really interesting, and I don't know if it's the age of, from a recruiting standpoint, if it's the age of AI or just the age of recruiting automation, but I mean, and there are some new phrases for it. When we talk about these bots and machine learning, and it's human bot, hobot, it's not hobot, cobot.
Hobbit? Did you say hobbit?
Can we edit hobot? I don't want hobot in the presentation, but it's literally the collaboration, right, between humans and new technology and living living in a mixed reality world is coming. And in a lot of places, it's already here. What will that mean for jobs, displacement of jobs, jobs that are in categories that are ripe for displacement? We don't know yet. And I've used this story a couple of times, and I think at one session that I saw you at, but when I was at AT&T, we were letting go of or eliminating thousands of jobs at a particular point a year. And it got a lot of bad press. But the reality was that we were also creating thousands of jobs. And the shift, it was not about getting rid of people. It was a shift in the talent that was needed to keep up with the technology and the demands of the consumer side. So it was going from, on the AT&T side, it was going from a wireline organization becoming more of a wireless company, right? And looking for people whose talents match that. And I think that that sort of shift in technology is pretty exciting. And there will be people, I think, that are excited about that shift within recruiting. And there will be people that, are a little scared of that shift. And I think that's okay. And one of the pieces that I had spoken about last week at a conference was the actual matching and the searching. A lot of recruiters are scared. Will a robot be able to match technology faster and better than I can? And I think we're at a point today, eventually maybe, but remember that it will learn ultimately from human beings initially, and the machine learning piece will evolve. But while today actually matching and searching for talent was a really big interest, I think a lot of really ambitious entrepreneurs like Tala's Rob May, right, are taking a step back from that piece and hitting hard the more mundane and more repetitive, low brain power type of roles, if you will, like general HR questions that sort of lock up time of so many HR admins, for example. When do I have to enroll for benefits? How many dental cleanings do we get each year for our bennies? When's the next town hall? Those kind of things, and being able to tackle those. And I think that's the first step in sort of a smart evolution that will ultimately and easily, I think, shift into the TA space. We already see this in place with some of the chatbots that are out there with recruiting.ai, pretty interesting product, right? Which is in the, I think they're based in the city that you're in, this actually. But with scheduling at Career Crossroads, we use Amy and Andrew, the X.AA product. So scheduling and basic screening and some of the really neat stuff that, say, Intuit has vision in their vision that's just ahead for the rest of this year. So I think it's a really long-winded way of saying, I think that piece is big and I think that continues to evolve. And I think it's going to change our space considerably. And it will help not only with the advertising, like we saw Unilever do just recently, and a targeted piece there, but it'll also help, I think, with sort of shifting how we act and behave and work as recruiters.
You know, and again, as a former recruiter, I feel like I can say this, but recruiters, the recruiting community, likes to get up in arms about automation and AI, because the idea of replacing something that a recruiter does so well seems like a, you know, an insult to the art of recruiting. But the idea, what I always say, is that if you think about it, if you do it well, it should be automating the stuff they don't want to do anyway, that the stuff that's not artful, the things that actually can help provide a better candidate experience. And we're not talking about replacing sourcing, which is the highest touch part of recruiting. That is really the artful, you know, sort of high touch engagement and conversational piece. But the things, like you said, interview scheduling and answering basic questions and providing information that can help prepare you for a positive interview experience and do better and provide us feedback. Those types of feedback loops and providing information and just assisting in workflows, oh my gosh. To me, that's where technology provides a more human touch, ironically, because it's giving information, it's creating a conversation that otherwise wouldn't be there, because human beings don't have time, they can't scale themselves to give all of that, you know, kind of interaction.
Yeah, well, I mean, and let's be honest, even as a candidate, as a consumer, and I was listening to a conversation the other day, from a customer experience standpoint, a lot of us dread the phone call. We don't want to pick up the phone and be on hold and have and then actually have to interact with somebody and explain what's going on. There are a lot of instances already where being able to work with a chatbot, a really well done chatbot, is so much easier, where we can ask. It's a brutal efficiency. Where we can get a status on an order, or we can figure out what's going on with, you know, check number, whatever, right, when we reach out. And I think that that's a big delivery item that can come out from a recruiting standpoint is, can I get a status on my requisition, right, or my application? I need, remind me what the address is to the location that I'm supposed to be at. Can I bring my dog to work? Are you a dog friendly, pet friendly type of environment? And I think these are some of the things we're seeing done really well already by a handful of organizations that are taking that approach in a humanistic way with the robots, but taking that approach seriously.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cobot? Yeah, Cobot.
I'm going to remember.
Cob with a C.
So I was thinking Durbin, but you'll need to tell me if there's anybody better to have a bot conversation, because that's on the list once I get into candidate management, because I think that stuff is pretty cool and exciting.
John Sumser is doing some really neat work, and I think he's getting ready to release some data points. And I just love anytime I get to sit down and pick John's brain, it's just a good time. So he's doing a lot of AI stuff and has been doing quite a bit of reading and research there. I'd watch for that, keep an eye out for that, and engage him if you run into him on the road.
Yeah, absolutely. Good tip. So I want to talk about, everybody's calling themselves an employee engagement company, I've noticed these days, because employee experience, employee engagement, the whole talent life cycle. And I think it's good. I actually think it's good that this conversation is bleeding beyond the hire. It should. And so when you think about it, starting all the way at the top of the funnel with employer brand, that's sort of a promise, right? This is who we are. This is what you'll experience with us. And then we use employee advocacy to sort of tell that story and humanize our company and employee storytelling and all of that. And we take that all the way through candidate experience. So it's, you know, dating is like courtship. This is not a new analogy. I'm sorry, recruiting is like courtship. And so every touch point, every interaction with you have with a candidate, you're sort of wooing them, hoping that, you know, eventually you might make a commitment to each other. So I actually like the idea of this bleeding into employee experience. How does a talent acquisition professional ensure that all of those promises, that experience they've delivered up front, we're talking about candidate experience, is what is delivered? Because I don't want to fill the same recs over and over. So if I've landed this great talent and then we don't deliver on the employee experience, we all know the retention numbers that can happen down the road. What are you seeing in terms of that conversation?
Yeah, I love the dating marriage analogy. I think it's a little painful for some, maybe on both sides of it, but it usually is true, right? You're investing all of this time and energy into the courting process. And then once we've sort of made that relationship or a reality, one of us or both of us just sort of stops. You stopped going to the gym, I stopped buying you flowers, I forgot your birthday. And it's just like one of us gave up or both of us gave up, and it's painful and it's difficult. It feels like a bait and switch. And I think a lot of candidates, unfortunately, go through sort of that painful transition. And we spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions, investing in external career sites and marketing. Yet hundreds of companies continue to take a hit in their org health surveys because employees complain about internal mobility. They don't know how to find their next job, when to look, where to look, or the experience of looking is so hard or so cumbersome. A lot of times it's just easier to leave that organization or leave that manager. And I think companies are beginning to get that, and they're beginning to dig in. In some instances, we're seeing dedicated internal recruiting teams that are being developed. So their sole mission is to actually recruit internal candidates and to continue the wooing process and the career development piece. I think we're seeing organizations take a more serious look at the experience of employee development. I think it was Cornerstone that just launched a brand new learning platform that is very much like Netflix. So not only is it taking a look at what's ideally next for you based on skills, but based on interests in your position and what's trending for training programs and these solutions to keep employees engaged once they're in the organization and continue them forward. And I think it's really important too that the talent acquisition teams take this piece seriously, that they are not just, one and done and can wash their hands of a candidate once they've come into the organization, but to realize that, we are a big part of the human and human resources, and there are relationships that we have founded and that are important for us to maintain within the organization as they go forward.
And I think that point you made about the experience of the internal candidate being equally important as the experience of the external candidate, which is what we're all focused on in talent acquisition because we think external. But think about what that means for external recruiting as well. If I'm an applicant and you're courting me and you tell me about that internal mobility program, once you're in, we don't forget about you. We want you to mark yourself in the employee portal as being interested in other opportunities, but we're going to take it even further. We're actually going to, handle you in a certain way. If you're an internal applicant, we're going to communicate with you often. This is going to be part of your development piece. There's a mobility, there's options. That means something to me if I'm an aspiring professional who, especially working for a big company where you literally can grow and advance an entire career just moving around your own organization. So to me, that becomes an important sort of selling point to an external recruiting strategy as well.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think any new candidate is really interested in sitting inside of a laissez-faire type of approach to their, their internal career. And I think, unfortunately, that's just what a lot of organizations do, especially large organizations. It's so easy for them to say, when you get here, you're in charge of managing your own career. And it's on you to identify your development and your opportunities. And I think that's going to turn around and bite a lot of people if it hasn't bitten them already. And that's why I think the development and a lot of the automation piece is really important. Taking us back to the bot chat. And the bot topic, I mean, how great would it be for this technology to deliver a career concierge to every single employee, right? To be able to say, based on status updates and maybe performance reviews and, anything else that's in that system and accessible, the bot is actually able to recommend, or the AI is actually able to recommend next steps. Didn't get the job and the disposition status showed because you didn't have enough management experience. We'd like to recommend in our LMS, our learning management system, that you take this management course that might help you. Or we show that, you know, the last five people who landed a role similar to that had these three skills that you didn't. Let's work on developing those. And I think that's going to be a big shift in that piece too.
So as we wrap up this topic, I want to sort of summarize the critical touch points where candidate experience perhaps matters the most, or where it's like the easiest to fix and address. Because when I started thinking about this topic with you, and because I'm on the technology side, I'm in the vendor space now, I can't help it. I get really excited about all of the top of the funnel stuff we do to attract and nurture and engage, because it's cool. I mean, there's so much cool stuff we're doing around branding and advocacy and personalization and that top of the funnel online experience. But when I was thinking about this topic and what you've done, you know, through Career Crossroads and the feedback you get, it's really pretty basic. Like the stuff that we can really impact: hiring manager training, you know, good interviewing, interview feedback from candidates, that interview suite experience that one of your colloquium members offers. I can't recall which one, you know, giving them a little. Yeah, Lily has like a interview lounge where they can sit and prepare and be relaxed before their interview and have access to information about the company, especially while they're waiting in between interviewers. The stuff that we can do to really impact candidate experience is really pretty simple. And I think I think that's kind of a good way to maybe wrap up this topic, you know, to think about the really simple things you can do that can actually have a lot of impact. Are there any that I forgot? I gave a few examples.
A lot of these don't even cost money. They're just a little bit of effort and time. And, you know, one that sticks with me that we continue to get wrong, and we have gotten it wrong since I started in recruiting almost 25 years ago, job descriptions. They are absolute crap across the board for the most part. And we just don't take the time as recruiters to write a job description that is easy to read and easy to get through. And there are fantastic vendors out there that can help with those job descriptions in terms of cleaning them up and helping to eliminate unconscious bias and attracting more of a diverse audience or more of a diverse candidate. But if a recruiter would just take 5 minutes to look at a job description before they publish the posting and push it out there, I think they'd also see a little bit of a difference in that candidate flow and candidate quality that comes back. I've seen job descriptions that were nothing more than 34 bullets. No intro, no paragraph, just 34 bullets of craziness. And I've seen others that have been
about the company, not about the candidate.
Yeah, or a 500 word paragraph, one paragraph, or the spelling errors and the impression that this really easy piece to conquer gives to candidates is huge. So I think that's a really easy one. It's free. It is not a big deal to update, I think. And just remembering, and I think I said a little earlier, and to your point, put some of the human back into human resources and talk to these people like you would want to be spoken to when you are a candidate. I mean, God forbid you'll be looking for a job at any time in your career and having to go through the apply process, which is personal and painful and sometimes a challenge. But setting it up so that it would be something that, you know, you would be okay with going through is probably the best way to sort of look at that.
Yeah. Absolutely. I've always said job descriptions are marketing collateral. That should be a marketing piece you're using and treat it as such. It shouldn't be all about you. Try to speak to the, you know, the person you're speaking to and make it about them. Make it easy for them to convert themselves.
Well, and every recruiter doesn't need to be a wordsmith, but you've got somebody in your organization whose strengths you can leverage. And if it's marketing, then so be it. But get it to somebody who can at least make those things attractive.
Yeah. So next week I have Will Staney, because I think he's going to be pretty good at this topic of conversion. I love, you know, he's also a former client of mine when he was at VMware and I was at Jobs to Web. And he was, you know, he's one of these talent community managers before the title existed. He literally made up a job title, wrote his own job description, and started doing this internally at VMware. The concept of collecting a talent community, nurturing passive candidates, you know, speaking with them, actually having a conversation. So once we spend all this time at the top of the funnel trying to attract the right people, what are we actually doing with them? Are we having a conversation? Are we providing, you know, what's the content approach or the advocacy approach? So I want to talk about that conversion piece, making sure that as they get to that point in the funnel or the whatever shape we're going for, the shoot, that we're not wasting resources on the conversion piece. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, because he's a big believer in all of the tools and the tech out there, but also the really simple things that we can do. You know, if you've got a talent community, are you talking to them? Are you sending them anything other than poorly matched job suggestions?
I think it's great. We'll be great on that topic. And we're seeing a lot of organizations that are starting to really take a look at that gap, in that, you know, you get 50 big brands, it's easy for them to get about 50,000 uniques apply a month. And that's about 600,000 candidates a year. And they're not hiring anywhere near that. And there's an awful lot of waste in there. Candidates that go untouched, that don't get connected, that never hear back. And then every time a rec comes open again, what do? We're not dipping back into the where we've already got a bit of a relationship. We're spending again. We're investing again. Right. So it should be a lot of fun to hear. We'll talk on that.
Yeah, I think so too. Awesome. Chris, thank you. This was an amazing topic. I love this topic so very much, because there's so many ways to break it down. And I think we did a decent job of trying to touch all of the major points. But yeah. And Career Crossroads has tons of great information on the site too. I was reading up a little bit last night, because I knew you had a really great session back in March around this topic. And it's always surprising how basic the concepts are, the things that we're trying to measure and wrangle in candidate experience, but also the exciting stuff that's coming out to help. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Well, thank you for the invitation, and always happy to jump on a call with you, Jess.
All right, thanks. Thanks everybody for joining the Road to HR Tech. We are back on next Wednesday with Will Staney talking about the very thing I just teased. So tune in. Thanks for joining, and we'll see you next week.
You're listening to the Career Crossroads broadcast of today's shared headlines. CXR members get full articles and additional members-only content at careercrossroads.com.